Well, welcome back to Tyler's Restaurant here in Durham, North Carolina, where we are having a beer cast. And we have been speaking with Tyler. We've been speaking with Daniel Bradford. And now we are joined by Julie Bradford. Julie, hello, and welcome to Tyler's Restaurant in the beer cast.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. We've been talking about the various goings-on, not only with the restaurant biz, but specifically with regards to beer in North Carolina. And I know that you've been very involved with a particular item that's come forth, but rather than my do it wrong, I'm going to have you do it right and talk about a little bit about Pop the Cap.
Okay, this is a very big week in North Carolina beer history. North Carolina is on its way to joining 44 other states in the country and allowing beers over 6% in alcohol content. Now, this may not sound significant, but North Carolina has been one of six states that has prohibited beers stronger than 6%. What that means is one-third of the classic beer styles in the world aren't available for sale here. So it's not really about alcohol content. It's about the range of great beers that have never been available here. And now that we've passed a bill in the North Carolina Assembly, pending the governor's action within the next 10 days, suddenly the beer world is going to open up here in the state in a way it never has before.
Very fine. And that's for brewers here in state, for brewers across the country, wherever distribution can get to us,
exactly.
Then we'll have an option for their brews that we have not had before.
Yeah, so we're going to see a lot of classic beers come in from Europe. Brewers from other states who've been making these stronger beer styles for a number of years as part of this sort of general American beer revolution.
Right.
And the part that I'm actually most excited about is the opportunity that North Carolina brewers have for the first time to really strut their stuff with these styles.
Yes, 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 I see. Well, in some of the North Carolina brews that we've had, I know Tyler has, I asked him the number of North Carolina beers on tap here, and I can't remember. I think I lost count after six or eight or something like that. But the beers here have been limited, certainly by the alcohol content, but they haven't really had the chance to get out in terms of general public because there haven't been as many places even for them to sell. I mean, the alcohol content aside, right? Has that changed in the last... I was talking to Daniel about this a little bit. Have you seen that change in the last handful of years?
Well, I think this is going to open up North Carolina breweries, their products, to other states because suddenly, you know, you'll be able to do what you do well. The brewers here are very, very talented, and in a funny way, I think it sharpens your skills to have to work with a limited range of styles. So these guys have basically taken styles like pale ale and porter and IPA, and they have made their bones with those styles. Now that they can cut loose and make a Doppelbock, a strong ale, some of the classic Belgian styles, imperial Russian stouts, let's see what they can do when they can reach into those classic styles. So I think everything's going to open up in a wonderful way.
Well, I know that you're an editor of a magazine.
I am.
And now I've become political activist. Did that change come about? Just tell me a little bit about that, how you fell down that set of stairs,
that
as it
little,
were.
That little rabbit hole. I know. This was not supposed to happen. I write a beer column for the News and Observer in Raleigh, mm-hmm. and I've been doing that for a few years. Weekly column, and you get a little starved for topics if you're trying to hit a weekly schedule. And so periodically, I just have a good little rant about the 6% law because a rant is fun. You get a lot off your chest. It gives you a lot to write about. You can use terms like boneheaded and ludicrous and antediluvian and, you know, all sorts of things you can hurl at a stupid 70-year-old post-prohibition law. So I would kind of, you know, cut loose about every 6 months. 2.5 years ago, I warmed up for a rant around New Year's because I could imagine in other states people were getting ready with little bitty bottles of Thomas Hardy's old ale that they'd been treasuring. They were pulling out the special Christmas beers that are released each year that are 8 or 9%. And I just envisioned us here, you know, with our very nice beers, but cut off from some of the festivities. And so I ranted about that. But unlike other columns, I then got up a good head of steam and said, right, this is the year we could change this, and this is these are the steps we should take.
Right.
We would do, you know, you would get together all the possible stakeholders. You'd try to find out who has an interest in the beer industry. We'd probably need a lobbyist because we're following the steps of states like Georgia that are also doing this. And I laid out about six or eight steps that I thought would get the law changed, knowing nothing about the legislative process.
And this was all just in service of the column?
This was just me getting a column out.
Just getting all drummed up.
I just wanted to meet my deadline, and so it ended with some great rallying cry. You know, North Carolina beer lovers, is this the year we will shake off this boneheaded law? Ta-da! What happens? I start getting emails.
Yeah.
And this one, folks write and say, okay, what are you going to do about it?
Uh-huh.
And my reaction was, holy Moses, I didn't want to do anything about it.
I just wanted to have a rant
and get a column out. but I decided, because I'd been talking, there were a lot of people who'd been thinking about this, including Tyler, in whose fine establishment we're sitting tonight.
Uh-huh.
He's actually been working with beer lovers to get this changed for longer than I have, I think. But this kind of galvanized folks, and I invited all the people who emailed me to come by the All About Beer offices.
Right.
That's the magazine I edit. And we just have a beer on Saturday and talk about it.
Wow.
45 people showed up. Once it went out to the
Daniel,
email
go
traffic,
get some more beer.
Exactly. We're going to run out of beer. And we looked around the room, and we thought, oh, my goodness, we've got a movement. What are we going to do? And it took us the first year to get together, figure out what the process would be of changing the law, figure out who we would have to speak to, who we would have to gently pull over to our side, how we would broaden the base of support for a change
mm-hmm.
like this,
yeah, yeah.
How we would break down this state's long, long opposition to anything alcohol, how we would raise the money for a lobbyist, which we concluded we would need. And that was 2.5 years ago. So a year of building up ahead of steam, a year of enlisting the specialty beer businesses that want
to
participate
sure.
in this. Because big beer wouldn't touch us,
no.
obviously.
No.
And then 6 months of incredible activity starting at the beginning of this year when the long session began in the legislature, culminating in the vote 2 days ago, the final vote in the Senate, 27-21, I think, in favor of Bill 392 to amend the definition of malt liquor. But essentially what that does is allow beers up to 15% in strength as soon as this bill becomes law. Ta-da!
Now, you know, I know there have been, you've been on the radio, you've been on TV, and the print column is all going along, but it seems that many of the questions about the number, putting a number on the alcohol content, people are all saying, oh, well, geez, you know, then it's going to, we're afraid what this is going to do for folks. And I think one of the things you've done quite well is express to people that it really is not so much everybody's trying to achieve this high number of alcohol content, more it gives the chef, as it were, the brewmeister, some more opportunity to develop the beer. And as we were talking with your husband, Daniel, that whole idea of developing the palate of beer,
yes.
that was, you can develop it only so far when the rules are thus.
Right.
You can develop it to another level when the rules are changed some. And I think that's an important step that you've made, aside from changing the law, is simply educating people about this. And that's huge.
The majority of the beers that will come in, you know, the new beers will probably be in the 8-9% range
mm-hmm.
because that's where some of these traditional styles just naturally finish up. As short a time as maybe a decade ago, it was extraordinary to find beers in the 11-12% range.
Mm-hmm.
That was really pushing the ability of yeast to
right.
turn sugar into alcohol.
Into alcohol, sure.
Now there are people out there really pushing the envelope. The thing we had to try to explain to legislators who, of course, if they've spent their entire lives in North Carolina, do not know that there is
no.
another world of beer out there. Nothing against them. Why
they haven't had
know?
The opportunity to see it.
I think they were rather terrified by the idea that one could conceivably have beer of supposedly any strength. what we wanted initially when we called it Pop the Cap, we really wanted to pop the cap off. Out of the 44 states that do not have this limit, most of them have no limit at all. They simply define beer as a fermented malt-based beverage that is over 0.5%.
And no top end floor to the whole deal.
No top end, yeah.
Wow.
Because that's the way they defined it after Prohibition. There was no top end, and therefore they've never introduced one. And you know, at the end of Prohibition, beer maxed out at maybe 9%. A few years later, you know, recently they've pushed it, but there was never any reason to put a cap on it. I'm convinced that the only reason there were ever caps introduced was purely a class issue.
Interesting.
The sort of people 70 years ago who were making the laws were drinking something different from the sort of people they were making laws for.
Not uncommon.
And beer drinkers being generally the working people, that being the most affordable beverage, it was apparently found appropriate that those people be subject to a little more state oversight in what they consumed than the wine or spirits drinking classes. I can't swear to this, but I can't think of anything else that makes sense. Why would you put a cap on the working man's drink and put no limitations on wine and spirits?
And arbitrary at that, I would think.
Completely arbitrary.
Yeah.
15% is also arbitrary. We eventually, I mean, this has been a political education.
Yeah.
We had to dicker around a little bit with people, and it was clear that the legislature was not going to buy no cap.
Open-ended, yeah. They needed a number to describe.
Because it was hard to explain to them that ultimately the yeast decide for you. Mm-hmm. You know, yeast can only go so far before they poison themselves in their own toxic environment. But that was a little hard to put across, so we finally thought, okay, we'll pick a number. This is very high. 15% is high enough so that, as far as I can tell from lists of the world's strongest beers, there are only 23, 24 beers that are over that are documented.
Uh-huh.
Most of those are made by brew pubs. A few of them are beers that it would be loads of fun to have if you wanted to dig deep enough in your pocket to afford them.
Mm-hmm.
But that includes things like Boston Beer's Utopias.
Mm-hmm.
That's 25% alcohol. It's also $100 a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see no reason why I shouldn't be allowed to buy that. I still won't be able to. That's okay with me. I will travel to buy my Utopias, and I will enjoy the greater freedom I have here in North Carolina.
But you put on your political hat and say, well, no, I don't. Well, that 10% difference between 15 and 25, we'll take a trip. So be it.
Politics is the art of compromise.
And I take it that you were not, I'm stepping back a little bit in our conversation, but there was no political activity before this? I mean, you did vote, didn't you?
I voted. I put bumper stickers on my car, but here's where I get most politically involved in my whole life. I've testified in front of House committees now.
Interesting.
I've been the kind of face of Pop the Cap for many purposes. And I've been lobbying and work behind the scenes to try to persuade legislators that this was a change that would make life in North Carolina better. And
but
I really believe
even
that.
Something like lobbying to many folks is just a word. Yeah, that's people that go up and try and shake the trees up in the state house. I mean, that was new turf for you, right? Like, how do you do this? How does one lobby?
Basically, you pay someone, mm-hmm. and whether you do it the way we did, which was it's essentially the cake sale approach to changing laws. We raised money for this one beer drinker, one pint at a time. For our first year, we raised $20,000 in our first year in a series of small events that were, you know, people drinking beer, buying things at auction. We'd scrape it all together, and we'd have enough to keep going with whatever campaign we were working on. But it was and remains a true grassroots movement. What I am proudest of at the end of this is that this worked the way it's supposed to work. A group of people got together and demonstrated that they were willing to put their passion behind a change in the law.
Yes.
This was not a bill that any senator or representative was going to vote for because there was anything in it for them in the long term. We had no big money, no big beer behind us, no big wholesalers behind us. In fact, we had some of these entities working against us. All we had was
the people.
Passion of a bunch of beer geeks all over the state who were willing to call their representatives and tell them this meant something to them.
Yeah.
So oddly enough, I come out of this process less cynical than I went in. How about
wow.
that?
Wow.
that is truly unusual.
Is that a transformation? That's great. That's great.
Well, transition me a little bit from the talk about the legislative work and the grassroots efforts of those folks to now the reality. You and I are sitting here in Tyler's restaurant. Tyler, as we've already talked about, is a big proponent and a key player in this whole deal. Because to some it'd be, well, you know, there's a number on the beer and it's sold at the store. But here, Tyler's actually brought it into the fold, and he's brought it over to...
Over to Durham.
Over to Durham at this beautiful facility that's here with the ballpark next door, a fine restaurant in which we are speaking, and we've had, I would dare say, hundreds of people come through tonight.
Yes.
And continuing on, but he is educating people, and we spoke about this before we started taping. Some of his education to folks is about, hey, well, wow, I've only had these, you know, two or three beers, or I grew up in this place where there was limited beer. And most of us did, I think.
Right.
It's changed here. And the last, when I was talking to Daniel, I think that's changed.
Oh, the beer world's changed so much. Yes.
And you all must know it quite thoroughly through the magazine and website. But if that's, help me understand how it impacts a person like Tyler, who is not only, there's some places that are brew pubs, but Tyler's is getting brews from all over.
Yes.
So that's going to affect this whole scene here, will it not?
Tyler is going to have some very tough choices to make. There, North Carolina is regarded as a real plum in the beer stakes right now. Despite our law, despite the 6% cap, this has been an area that's had a wonderful interest in high-end beer. And brewers from outside the state have been happy to leapfrog over states in between in order to bring their beer
to North Carolina
because this is a prime market for the highest end of beer.
Yes.
Asheville, you better know your stuff if you go up there. Someone asked me the other day, is Raleigh going to, you know, Raleigh-Durham area, we're going to take the lead, the Triangle going to take the lead in beer culture? And I said, I live here, I'd like to say yes, but to be honest, Asheville's got a head start on us.
Wow.
There's a lot of, you know, great breweries and just an awful lot of sophistication.
Are there places up there that have just the sheer quantity of 60 taps?
They'll
that's
have
unusual for
us. It's very unusual. And a multi-tap bar is hard to run. You've got to have the turnover.
Yes.
You've got to take care of all those tap lines.
Mm-hmm.
But what faces Tyler in I hope in about a week's time is all those, figuratively speaking, imagine all these trucks of beer on the borders of North Carolina, knowing that this is a prime audience. They're looking at places like this. They're waiting to get their paperwork done and get across the border and convince him that he should take one of these beers off his tap and put theirs
on. Yes.
And we're going to see incredible changes in the next several months, I would guess. There'll be some people who get slightly hysterical and simply want to try everything at once. Others will be rather methodical working through it. I know that, well, the case we look to a lot through this whole time has been Georgia. Ohio changed their cap about in 2001. Georgia changed theirs exactly a year ago. And it's been a kind of living experiment we've been able to look to. Anytime anyone's been freaked out about what might happen when the law changed, oh my God, everyone's
look
going to get drunk and driving. They'll be, you know, youthful abuse. They'll,
right.
You know, someone stood up in the Senate.
Pretty standard
and said,
questions, as we've come to know.
This will lead to pregnancy, abortion, and suicide. Well,
right.
It's been nice to look to Georgia and talk to people who actually know what happens and come back and say, didn't happen, guys.
Didn't happen that way down there, and they're our neighbors.
What happened is 300 craft beers came into the Georgia market in one
wow.
year. And Georgia is now Atlanta is one of the hottest high-end beer markets in the country. They've gone from being a very nice international city to a beer mecca of sorts.
Uh-huh, right.
Such that when the importers, Merchant Duvin from Seattle, launched Rochefort 8, which is it's a gorgeous beer made by Trappist monks in Belgium, they debuted the beer in the East Coast in Atlanta, a city that had only had access to this beer
for a year,
and they threw this great party. Atlanta is the biggest market in the entire country by a couple fold for a beer called Celebrator Doppelbach, which beer geeks, their eyes will roll back in their head at this point. This is one of the most beautiful German Doppelbachs. And suddenly, the hottest market is one-year-old Atlanta.
Wow.
This is what could happen, and these are the tough choices that will be facing somebody like Tyler. What do I program? How do I suddenly portion out?
How do you
These 60 tap handles aren't going to look like enough all of a sudden.
And he already said that not.
It's about all you can manage with the turnover, but he'll have some tough choices. It's kind of a nice position to be in.
Sure. Well, talk to me a little bit about the marketing difference when you have a craft brew that's available on tap and people that are coming in. I know for a long time, and I'll date myself a little bit, but we'll call it early to mid-90s, where people would have beer that was on the shelf. So now you're at Harris Teeter, and you're going against the marketing arm of Anheuser-Busch or Miller or whoever. How does that 1-2 punch, meaning beer available only on tap at Tyler's, or you name your favorite brew pub, or beer that's available on the shelf, or the combination of those two, do brewers move and sell like that? Say, hey, well, you need to have this because we're selling a Dynamo over here to Harris Teeter and to the various grocery store chains around here.
I'm not sure. I think the bottled trade can be a great complement and addition to the tap trade, the draft trade, because there are certain beers that are only available on bottle. Or you're not going to go through the kind of quantity. So, and one solution for a bar like this would be to take up your taps with draft beers that move a little more quickly. But for example, there are some beers that are actually rather hard to get in draft. But I'd like to know that I could come in here and get a bottle of Duvel, which is another Belgian beer I adore.
Sure, know them well.
And have that with lunch. In fact, I've just found out they're on their way.
All right. As soon as the governor signs that bill.
They all have their eyes on North Carolina. They know we're thirsty.
they're in that truck across the border.
They're gunning the engine, and Duval's one of the ones lined up out there. Chimay has their eye on us.
Wow.
Omegang has their eye on us. Unibrew out of Quebec is eyeing us. And, again, if Georgia is anything to go by, those products will come here, and people will descend on retail and buy it all out. It'll be really hysterical at first because there's a lot
it's
of
new
pent
to the
up
market.
Demand.
Sure, absolutely.
People have been driving to Virginia and dropping $300 a trip on what they will suddenly be able to buy from Sam's Quick Stop here in Durham. They're going to carry some of this.
Talk to me a little bit about the fear factor, as was mentioned before. People say, oh, well, if we raise the alcohol content, then all this, that, and the other. Well, there's a lot of leftover time, and basically any political genre, take it over time, they work on fear. And so all those things are based on fear, yet the reality is, as you said, you have Georgia as a reference. This didn't happen.
Yeah.
So how did you battle that? How did you battle when politicians deal in fear, they deal with the most basic human instinct.
If it can scare you.
Yeah,
yes.
and many people vote on that. I think we might have seen that in the last election or two, although I'm not sure.
It might have happened.
How do you battle fear? When somebody goes to say, okay, I'm going to get them with fear, how do you do that?
By background, I'm a science geek, so I really believe in facts and data. And part of, a sign of my maturation as a political animal was to realize that data doesn't matter sometimes if someone has a vested interest in not learning anything. I saw a wonderful quote in the paper the other day, in a column that I'm paraphrasing, but it said essentially, you cannot make a man understand something if his paycheck depends on his not understanding it.
Oh, yes.
I encountered this.
Very well stated.
I thought it was wonderful. And of course, that makes no sense to you if you believe only in data. So I came, the breakthrough for me was to work on this and to look at interests, not at data.
Yes.
Basically, opposition to the Pop the Cap bill fell into three pretty neat categories, and it was useful to me when I could finally figure out what they were.
There's that scientist going at it.
I
can see it. Look at
she's
categorizing
them.
I was like, are they A, B, or C?
Group A. Group A was people who don't approve of alcohol, period. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And as far as I'm concerned, that's a personal choice they make.
Sure,
if they
to
make
be respected.
That, that's fine. I respect that, but I would also ask that they respect my choice to include alcohol in my life, which in the main, they did not. Group B was people who have a vested financial interest in the alcohol establishment as it is now. They're in the business. They don't want to see any sacred cows gored.
Yes.
Group C were the people who had some very real fears about whether this would make North Carolina a less safe place. Would it lead to more drunk driving?
Because of their lack of understanding,
yes.
I assume, right? So you have the opportunity
exactly.
to educate them.
So we could go to them with things like statistics from Mothers Against Drunk Driving, who were neutral on this bill because they figured they
wow.
just found this did not contribute to drunk driving or underage drinking stats.
Very impressive.
It's not a
yes.
factor that they look at. We could point to Georgia. We could point to Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with this third group, if you sat down with them, you could find out very quickly which group they were really in. If you sat down with them and said, look, you're concerned about the safety of your kids, so am I. Here's what MAD and other groups have found about how important the alcohol content of beer is to underage drinking or unsafe driving, drunk driving, and there's no evidence that this makes things any worse.
Yes, I see.
Some people you talk to would say, well, I'll be. That's very reassuring. Now I feel okay about supporting this. Other people would keep shouting, drunk driving, underage drinking. And then you'd think, you know, you're not really in group three at all.
You're in
group one or two. You don't want this to pass no matter what. So that's how we dealt with that group whose, if their real fear was the consequences of this, we had to educate them about these beers.
Yeah.
And you found a certain number of people were wonderfully receptive to that.
Yeah.
Other people had simply exposed that they wanted to find, it was what one of our legislators called a catfish amendment, which is you attach something that is only there to doom the bill. And we found a fair number of those. But in the main, we actually found our legislators really open to learning about these beers.
Yes.
Tasting them. When I conducted tastings, I looked for two things. I looked for people to come away saying, whoa, I didn't know beer could taste like that. And then for them to say, and I don't see why I shouldn't be able to buy this.
Ah. Yeah.
Then I knew I had a convert.
Well, listen, I got to ask you. Now you have all this free time in your hand. The bill's done. What are you going to do? Like hang out and drink beer and you know, write an article now and again and then and no?
Every once in a while. I have to tell you, I can say this on a podcast. After I'd invested, you know, work over a period of 2.5 years, the gentleman you interviewed before took me aside and said, it's a good thing that you work for your husband because any other employer would have fired your ass. So now I have to get in with the publisher again and
back
make sure
sync.
that he knows that I am actually taking my work at the magazine very seriously.
Well, there better be a tag team effort there. And I happen to know there's a youngster at hand here who could lay into the whole scheme as well.
Exactly.
Well, listen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I cannot
fun.
Tell you how much I appreciate all the information that has transpired here.
It's loads of fun to talk about this.
Beer can be talked about for ages, and I'm sure it will. And is there any place in particular, although the bill is passed, where people could make contact with you about other issues or about the ongoing nature of the bill that you could mention to us?
Absolutely. I can be reached via email at julie@allaboutbeer.com. There is also a website for Pop the Cap, www.popthecap.org, that will have some updates. I imagine we'll have a little downtime now that we've actually gotten the thing passed, but you'll be seeing a lot in the press, I assume, as these new beers roll out.
Very fine. Well, Julie, thanks so much for being with us, and here's to more podcasts on beer, or more beer casts, as it were. And also, I'd like to thank all the guys at Tri-Fi who have supplied our music with us tonight. And a little tune they have. There's a jazz trio from New York, and you can find them at try-fi.com. So thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next time around.
Thank you.